ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The tiny leak that began the Jeffrey Epstein scandal has become a flood.
Millions more documents relating to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein were released by the US Department of Justice.
But are we prepared to grapple with the implications?
It's corruption of the entire system.
And will we ever know the whole story? I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we chart a course through the biggest news stories around the world. New episodes on ABC Listen every Tuesday and Thursday.
New Liberal leader Angus Taylor has announced his shadow frontbench, and it's quite the shake-up, promising to blend generational change with proven experience. Angus Taylor's key allies have been rewarded. Well, that always happens with big portfolios. But some key moderates, like newly minted shadow treasurer Tim Wilson, have also been kept in the tent, interestingly, with the focus squarely on economic policy. So will the reshuffle pay dividends, and will it keep the party united? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein from ABC Radio Melbourne.
And Raf, he's unveiled his shadow cabinet, some big winners and some snubs.
So what's more important? I'm going to throw the question right back to you.
Oh, of course you are.
Well, only because it looks like he's got all the sharpest tools in the toolbox, all pointing in the right direction. I'm not sure talent has been nearly as much an issue just agreeing on stuff, right? They just don't agree on stuff. So I think our whole conversation about who he's got prosecuting agenda against the government, it only works as long as they all agree. And the thing they haven't been able to do for like 10 years is all agree.
Yeah, I think that is an excellent point. That's what I was trying to do with on the Four Corners this week to show just how divergent they are on some issues, right? But I do think talent, you can't say, is nothing to do with it.
Absolutely.
I think they have been, and ironically, you could say this about the actual leader who's had to appoint a new shadow treasurer, right? Ted O'Brien, I think he was competent, but did he set the world on fire in the last 9 months? He did not. Angus Taylor, I think, was a little sometimes lackluster as shadow treasurer.
Yeah. Isn't the biggest charge against Angus Taylor and Jane Hume, other than the leader being Peter Dutton, they were in charge of policy. I think they were both on the shadow cabinet version of an expenditure review committee, in as much as they have one. They didn't cut through. They didn't come up with policies that worked. In fact, they both were advocating policies that led to one of their worst results in decades.
Yeah.
So it's not a great start.
No. Well, Angus Taylor owned that straight away, right, at his press conference last week. Big mea culpa on the higher taxes and opposing tax cuts.
But that's why the agreement's more important. Like Jane Hume, God love her. Like if I am struggling to get someone on the radio, Jane Hume will often come on the radio. So she's often the person pushed to the front. But being willing and being able, like, it only gets you so far. But let's talk about the strengths. Let's talk about the strengths.
First, okay, so Tim Wilson, moderate that didn't vote for Angus Taylor. So to give some Angus Taylor some credit, and yet he appoints him in this key portfolio, smart.
Definitely smart. Okay, let's try and balance up Tim Wilson. If you don't know him, he did take back the Teal seat from Zoe Daniel. That's a plus in his column, although I know people in the Liberal Party who say that's a hard result to replicate elsewhere in the country. If people have heard of Tim Wilson, probably they heard about him because he prosecuted such an amazing case. He was in his 30s. He ran that House of Reps committee. He was one of the lead spear throwers when it came to attacking Bill Shorten's share dividend scheme, you know, that whole fight. Tim Wilson made such an impression. So he's got, you know, he has the runs on the board. The question I will ask you, Patricia Carvelis, because we all know Tim Wilson's going to get up in Parliament. He's going to ask a question to Shadow Treasurer. Jim Chalmers is going to get up. Timmy versus Jimmy, which I think was the headline in the Financial Review, which I quite like. Jim Chalmers is going to quote Tim Wilson's book back at him, isn't he? Where Tim Wilson's talking about intergenerational equity. Does that stuff matter? Like, is that a big thing the government can hurl at Tim Wilson? Does it make a difference to how effective he is?
I think that Tim Wilson will need to land policy that deals with things that he's written about and be consistent with that. And that's actually the bigger test. So Jim Chalmers can say what he likes, but at the end of the day, Jim Chalmers is presiding over higher interest rates,
Higher inflation.
Higher inflation. Like, let's not let this, I'm not saying you are, but let's not let this guy off the hook. This guy's got a bigger problem, and that's actually managing a pretty difficult economy. So he can try any, you know, rhetorical flourishes in the sort of spirit of the man that he's most looked up to, Paul Keating, who was very good at that too. But, you know, Paul Keating was excellent at it, but right to the end till he lost in a landslide, right? So, you know, I'd be careful with my wishery in the parliament, because your wish, you can be as witty as you want, but that won't win you a general election. Good policy will. So Tim Wilson has to deliver, right, all of the bigger, and he's got big ideas. He's got energy. Like, yeah, he does have, right? But he has to get everyone on the page to do big things.
So come back to my first point.
Just smash,
they've got to agree, right? Because you can only smash them
ideas,
with a good idea.
But he also has to not just smash ideas because, geez, that's good politics and the boomers will like it, right? Because that's what he's done in the past. The boomers like him. You've got to actually be able to provide wholesale change in the spirit of people like Allegra Spender, who calls for change but also wants to deliver something which is intergenerationally meaningful. That's what Tim's got to do if he actually wants to deliver something meaningful.
Okay, so that's a great way to think about it. How does he deliver change that's meaningful? How do they begin to prosecute a case when they've got a lot of ammunition in the government saddlebags, but maybe they don't have ammunition in their own policy? But look, let's go through one more person I know you wanted to mention, Claire Chandler, Tasmania. Is she the only person in the shadow ministry who's in her 30s?
I haven't done an age. No. James Patterson's 38 still.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yes, good pickup.
I actually know a lot of people's ages off by heart.
And does James Patterson,
really weird.
Does James Patterson act like your average 38-year-old? Probably not.
No, he was born 60.
Yeah.
but I was born 40. Like, everyone's born a certain age, don't you think?
Oh my God.
I was born 40.
You were born 40?
Yep, 100%. I was born 40. Okay. My daughter was born about 40 to my eldest, and she accepts that too, and she's like only 16. But, you know, some people are just born.
Yeah.
How about you? What were you born?
I don't have a good answer, but I do have a good friend who I know was born as though he was actually from the last century. He actually lives his entire life as though he's
really?
In the 1800s. Bit of a Renaissance
man. But then
man.
You meet people who were born 18 too.
You're demanding.
And then they're 50 and they're still 18.
That's true.
Yeah.
Is Claire Chandler being there, is it significant because of her age? Is it significant because of her ideological background, or they just don't have enough bodies to fill
the
cabinet?
Okay, so some key things here. I found her impressive in the way she spoke in the press conference yesterday as they were lining up. So, you know, first appearance on this, she was very articulate. However, her background is, so far, she's engaged on issues which you'd have to say, and I'm using this with the quotation marks, not with any judgment.
Air quotes.
She spent a lot of time talking about trans issues, issues like that.
Cultural.
Thank you. You'd put in that sort of space. Now, finance is not squarely culture war space, although what you spend money on is, of course, you know, like
100%
you could go
war.
To that as well. Yeah. So, right, so it'd be interesting. It's a big elevation for her, though. Like, she was not a front and center sort of media performer every day. To be finance spokesperson alongside the shadow treasurer.
It's not a small thing, is it?
No. And her and Tim Wilson are from very different parts of the party, him being a moderate, her being, you know, really much capital C conservative. But she's got a lot less experience than him, at least in the public sphere. I think she's got really like an impressive CV. I'm not, you know, I mean,
she's
in terms of.
She's got the qualifications on paper. Yeah.
So, but it was a big elevation, therefore a risk. But she's a young woman. Like, I think having women in his leadership team is smart for him, especially given he's a middle-aged bloke.
Okay, so let's think about two others. So Andrew Hastie on as an industry spokesman.
Not just industry, sovereign capability.
Okay. So a reminder, the very well-produced video where he's standing in front of the vintage Aussie car. I thought it was really well done, yes.
Okay.
I think it has cut through.
All right. Yeah.
The content could be a problem though, right? Some of the lines from that video, I think can't remember if it's December or January, but the video, he's standing in front of Noel Holden. He says, "We used to be about horsepower, heritage and grit." I think these are the damaging lines. "We used to make complex things in this country. We used to. We are a nation of flat white makers and that's all gone." Can Andrew Hastie prosecute an agenda that's a centre-right agenda in the style of Howard and Costello and stay true to a video like that?
No. What he has to do, again, and when I say has to, I'm not giving my own view of what I think's right. I can see both sides, actually. He has to try and convince some in his own party to perhaps abandon some of the old orthodoxy around what's right and wrong.
Are they okay, so you're the person who's – all those interviews that are on the cutting room floor that didn't make it into your four corners, do you think he can convince them to become more protectionist?
Yes.
They're up for it?
Yes.
Will it work?
I think he can convince some when it comes to some areas when he frames it. This is the thing, the missing part. That's where the sovereign capability.
Yes.
When the big, scary China question comes up and the, oh no, we're an island and we are dependent in this very dangerous way in this geopolitical environment.
Shipping lanes.
He frames it that way, yeah, he can convince them. If he tries to frame it around, oh, people like jobs and it's not nice that these men have lost jobs, not enough. Because on that, that's where you get the sort of economic rationalism. Go, hang on a minute, our economy's changed. They're always going to do it cheaper in China, you know, back in your box. But when he frames it as big, scary China, the world is changing, it's different. So it's the types of things. And on that, I think he can win. And on that, I reckon I got a strong indication from James Patterson, for instance, who I had in Four Corners, who sort of said, when we see it in the geopolitical framework, then he does have a point. So when framed that way, the car was a symbol, maybe a clumsy one.
But he says we're a nation of flat white makers. What about all the advanced manufacturing we do? The only manufacturing we do is advanced manufacturing. Mm. Like, is that a handicap if you're the industry spokesman?
I think that ideologically he's coming from a different place on this, which is what I was trying to get to with my documentary, than Angus Taylor for sure. Like, and they know there's a tension between their views. So back to him being chosen to do that, interesting, right? Like, get him to lean into it, even if you have a different view on it. What does that look like? Well, it looks like big government spending potentially, doesn't it? And how do you frame that, and what do you spend it on, and which jobs are you actually making?
It comes back to what I think is the headline. I just don't know how this coalition shadow cabinet agrees on stuff. They already didn't agree last time, and we know how that ended up. Other important question. So Susan Lee, the reason Susan Lee lost the leadership, right, the reason there was a coalition breakdown is the Nats got kicked out of shadow cabinet because they disagreed with shadow cabinet and they crossed the floor on the what I call the hate group legislation. All has been forgiven, right? Well, different to hate speech, hate group. All has been forgiven. The shadow Nationals ministers are straight back into shadow cabinet. I get that that's smart internally for now, and the conversations I've had with Nationals and Liberals post Angus Taylor's elevation, everyone's sort of happy campers. Is that a landmine in the future for Angus Taylor if there's no punishment for breaching shadow cabinet, or will they really all leave that in the past?
He's described to me by quite a few as the Nats whisperer. Basically, he's very close to the Nats. And I think that really demonstrates his own values and views about that coalition. So will it come back to bite him? Well, I don't know. I don't think so, actually, if I'm to be truthful. Right,
so
I think
they'll just let that one go.
I think they will. And I think the Nats already are seeing, and you can read whatever you want into it. I read a bit of gender.
Read a lot of gender.
Thank you. I do. I think
we
the way David Littleproud.
We can buck up and be restless under Susan Lee, but we can't.
Yeah,
we won't.
But David Littleproud
Angus.
Himself, the way he stood next to Susan Lee, as I'm not going to quote them, but someone senior said to me, couldn't even wear a jacket next to her. Like, you know, like that day where they got back together. He seems to be different around Angus Taylor. I will leave it there. I find that a little notable as a lady, and I think ladies do notice.
I think ladies will notice. Okay, let's transition then to some of the politics.
No, because we've got one other name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Jacinta Namba-Juper Price.
Sorry, who's she?
So she loses her job.
Yes.
From Susan Lee's front bench on the basis of comments she originally made on Afternoon Briefing, you'll recall, on Indian immigrants. That ended up being a big cluster for the coalition as they're trying to...
A cluster fracas, yeah. As some people say.
trying to rebuild relationships with migrant groups. Now, you should try and rebuild relationships with migrant groups for all sorts of reasons, like it's the right thing to do. But there's also another reason, which is...
they vote.
Oh, there's a lot of Australian Indians. And you would... it's at your peril, my friend, if you upset them. And as a Labor person said to me, I've quoted this before, like... they don't really love voting Labor. They would like to vote for the Liberals, but the Liberals aren't making it very easy for them, right? So, okay, yesterday Angus Taylor, in announcing Jacinda Nabajuba Price in the portfolio of small business, basically says, hey, let's just draw a line on that in terms of her comments. We've all moved on from it. But they've done a lot of damage. But she's a culture warrior and she's loved by their base. And as James Patterson said to me, on Four Corners, we want to lock down our base. So it's about that, isn't it?
The essential implication of that interview with you from Jacinta Nabajimba Price was that Labor brings in Indian migrants because they are far more likely to vote Labor. That's a pretty big thing to say.
And she's since said, to be fair, that they were clumsy, now, whatever you want to make of that, but, you know, that she – and also blamed, I'll say, me and the ABC
sure.
for her saying
but
it.
But nothing she's said in the past is – or nothing she's said since she spoke to you in that interview has entirely fixed the relationship with that community. She will relish the chance to speak her mind on a whole lot of issues. I think she said in a podcast over the weekend, I'm back, baby. Is that a future landmine for Angus Taylor? Because if it's hard, the whole headline for every entire conversation today is, do they agree on everything? Do they all see the same direction of travel? Is she someone who's likely to do an interview and say something that journalists will be saying, oh, hang on, Angus Taylor, is that shadow cabinet policy? And like, that's a real potential landmine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And what's interesting is how he manages it, because Susan Lee first lacked authority, and she lacked authority because they wouldn't give her the authority. You get authority when people allow you to be the leader, right? Like it's a mutual relationship. So we respect each other. It's a mutual decision we've made. But if you stop respecting me, I'm going to stop respecting you back, right?
You should see the look she's giving the people.
I am a little intense. It's the Greek blood, baby. So, okay, so that's the first thing. He does have authority. She's of the conservative wing, so is he. I reckon she might be playing a bit more nicely. That's my own analysis because of his leadership. I reckon there's just going to be more discipline under him. And perhaps because he does have, he's of the same tendency, he'll be able to, in his ideal scenario, manage it better. That's the best case scenario for him. But, yeah, it does provide risk for sure. Like, there is risk.
There's a bizarre analogy, or is it a bizarre analogy? The idea that only Nixon could go to China. You needed the most conservative person to do the more radical centre thing.
Yeah.
Similar for Angus Taylor.
And same on the hard line on immigration.
Yes.
So some of these people are wanting really they're dancing with the sort of, there's a line on, you know, having a race-blind immigration policy. And boy, I see them trying to get very close to that line at the moment, right? Angus Taylor, I know, does not think they should be crossing that line. Even though he's a conservative that's close to people like Tony Abbott, who is pushing on some of these issues. So how can, does he hold that line, and does he have the authority to say, guys, we can have strong rhetoric, strong inverted commas again, but you know, but we must hold that line.
So let's talk about
more
migration.
More than Susan Lee could.
Maybe so more than Susan Lee could. In the context of migration, this whole discussion around a group of women who are associated with ISIS for whatever reason, they end up over there. There's been various interviews done with these women, including some great ABC interviews in 2019. How the government should or should not assist them coming back, it's clear they're under a legal obligation to give Australian citizens Australian passports. I think it's also clear in the abstract that if a wealthy nation like Australia doesn't help countries in that region deal with this problem, then how on earth can we expect any help from countries in that region when we desperately want it? But let's put that in parentheses. Let's talk about the politics of this. The Coalition have been giving the PM a really hard time on this. One thing I want to ask you, if it's a good or profitable, productive thing for the Coalition to pursue, before I ask you, when Peter Dutton was trying to win the seat of Dunkley in the last term, because Peter Murphy died, the Labor member, I have a strong memory of the Coalition pushing really hard on the NZYQ cohort. This was the High Court case. Peter Dutton and his shadow ministers were placing a lot of pressure on the Prime Minister. the thing that really struck me is that when I was in this seat, which is in outside of Melbourne, I'd go to Frankston. No one was interested in talking about it. I thought it was also really interesting. The AM commercial talkback station in the city and the Herald Sun weren't really that interested in that story. It was not a story that was resonating in a seat like Dunkley. This is the classic outer suburban seat that you would think the coalition, this is their path to victory. Is it a profitable thing for them to be pushing the PM on, or are they really just trying to win back people from One Nation? Is it sort of, it seems to me like they're only building their foundation. This is not something that gets them anywhere near to where they need to be.
Yeah, such a good point, Raph. So they are definitely pursuing it because the politics is exactly where they want to be, because they right now they're saving the furniture. So they're trying to save what they've got. They're not. This is not a growth strategy. This is a press pause strategy, stop the bleeding strategy. So that's what it's about. Yesterday I had Tony Barry, I know you've got him on your show often too, on giving analysis before
he was,
and after.
He's saying something very similar. I heard him on
I'm about to quote him because it's not my own idea, but I happen to think it's a very astute analysis. He critiqued Angus Taylor coming out of the blocks yesterday with his front bench, but starting on ISIS brides, and I use that in inverted commas. A lot of inverted commas from me today. The ISIS families, yeah? And he said he just thought that was a very odd way to start. He should have just started straight out of the blocks, economy, economy, economy. We have got an economic team to try and come up with policies that will make your life better. That's what people care about. He said these issues are number five or lower, right? They're not coming up high. And so it's got to be about that base. It's got to be about those people who are really angry about, you know, all the different columns, immigration, bad jihadists. And I'm, you know, this is me, you know, just talking.
These are the word clouds sitting above
Thank
the coalition's
you. Yes, head. Yes. This mood boarding, right, of these things that are this type of voter that wants to vote for Pauline Hanson because they've decided, like, let's give Peter Dutton some credit. No one's given him any credit because he held those people. They felt like Peter Dutton was their guy, those people, right? He couldn't do anything about bloody middle Australia, right, the cities, and that's why they did so badly. But now they're even losing those people. And that's what they're trying to capture. And Angus Taylor is trying to go, I'm your kind of liberal that will do those things. My view is, and this is just my view, I reckon he's such a nerd and loves the economic stuff, energy stuff so much. Sometimes when he does Culture Warrior, I don't get convinced, do you?
I think there's a lot that can be unconvincing about Angus Taylor.
No, but particularly on those issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
When he came
he's
out
not
of the blocks and talked ISIS,
he's not
I was like, I don't know if you want to be talking. I don't think you can. I'm talking vibes. I just
100%.
Did not get the vibe.
He's not comfortable in that space. Peter Dutton was. I don't know if it led Peter Dutton to
he was too comfortable. Sometimes it was like,
yeah,
mate,
I think so.
And, let's talk about something else.
And it might also be worth saying, we are talking about people who've been convicted of nothing, who've been charged with nothing, who are a problem. Like, these are some of the poorest countries in the world, those refugees camps in Syria. And we are saying, as one of the wealthiest countries in the world, we can't keep an eye on these people. Like, what are you saying to a country like Syria, who everyone hopes gets the, you know, can actually prosecute a better future, if we're saying, nah, we're not even going to apply our own laws properly to them? They have been charged with nothing. So, look, That's something
right.
to stick in the
pinball. And, of course, then there's the extra, you know, and I can't help but put a bit of a feminist sort of lens on this, the case of the coercion of some of these women. Like, it's actually a tragic story. However,
yes,
there is some community anxiety about these things. Politically, you can understand why the Prime Minister's trying to hold the line on this.
He's also doing less even than Scott Morrison did, right? Scott Morrison actually did repatriate some of these families.
Yes.
So that means helped some of those families come back. Anthony Albanese is not even doing
that. So what does that show to you? That our politics has shifted since that time?
To the right.
Correct. That the community sentiment on from immigration to radical Islam, all of this, all our sentiments have shifted. Because if Albanese can't even match the Morrison level, that means something else has shifted, right?
Well, I guess that's the big question, right? So, yeah, sure, in that debate, our politics has shifted to the right. we can make the observation that Anthony Albanese as PM has not done as much as Scott Morrison did as PM. But we all know what the last election actually led to. You've sat there and looked at that parliament. I've sat there once or twice and looked at that parliament. I guess the big question, I mean, it continues to play on my mind, and it plays on my mind even more having watched your Four Corners. These guys, the Liberal Party and the National Parties, they can't agree on stuff. They haven't agreed on stuff for a decade. Doesn't matter how good they can prosecute an argument, if they can't agree on what they're arguing,
that is exactly, and we're coming to an end, but that is exactly the point I wanted people to get from that documentary, that while we're obsessed with characters, will it be Andrew Hastie? Then he withdrew. Will it be Angus Taylor? Then it was. Will it be Susan Lee still? No, she's going, right? They all represent radically different ideas of where this thing should go. And that's the thing. The personalities are proxies for deep ideological differences. And that's back to the Tony Barry line, no one knows what the Liberal Party stands for anymore.
Can I leave you with a footnote?
Please.
The latest poll in Victoria, right? Victoria is a case in point where you would think there is a substantial argument that an opposition can make after 12 years of a Labor government. The coalition's vote is still tanking. They are still in trouble compared to One Nation. Doesn't mean Labor's vote's good.
No.
Labor's vote is not good.
No, and the CFMEU scandal
is
revolting.
And we spoke about it on the radio a lot this morning, you know, my time, Wednesday in Melbourne. The ideological divide on the right is still crippling the right in Victoria, even when you'd think they've got a classic case of fantastic pieces of ammunition they can use against Labor. The ideological divide is still crippling them. I don't see evidence yet that the coalition's over it. And I think, watch this space, when you say Angus Taylor doesn't look convincing with some of his culture war stuff, I do think he's got some presentation style issues. Keep in mind, we've got one of the least articulate prime ministers in modern history in Anthony Albanese. I think that's fair. Like, he's not a great deliverer of a substantial argument.
Look how Pauline Hanson's so popular at the moment, allegedly, and she's never been a great orator. So we don't mind someone who's a bit shabby. I mean, look, they let me do this podcast.
I wasn't going to include you.
But my point is, this is a country that's kind of cool with not having Barack
Maybe.
Obama.
I think it is also where we are at in 2026, when your message is going out on social media and everything's being clipped up. It's your ability to hammer home a message and to say the same thing consistently over time that might be far more valuable than the ability to string together 10 beautiful sentences with punctuation and with perfect grammar. John Howard was great at that. You could transcribe his press conferences and they would end up in perfectly developed paragraphs. Maybe those things matter less. Welcome to 2026, people.
Welcome to 2026. Raph, Phil, it was cathartic. Thank you.
But I still haven't got over you staring at me saying you can turn on me. But hopefully I'll be invited back next time.
Yeah. I'm a friendly lady. That's it for Politics Now today. And if you have a question for Fran and I, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and we will answer it. See you, Raph.
Bye-bye.